So I've just arrived in Long Beach. Don't do it. Yep. In a massive coincidence, from the flight from Salt Lake City, I guess, to the last leg of my little journey, I sat right next to Gina Bolton, who's with me right now, who's laughing hysterically.
Hi.
Hasn't slept in
over
something like 30 hours or something. Because the massive coincidence part isn't necessarily that she sat next to me on this flight, which is a massive coincidence, but that we're just at the last conference together. Which was Smashing Comp in Barcelona. So you just flew from Barcelona today. You stayed a little longer than I did.
I did.
Yeah. And now we're on our way. So we've just explained that we're headed to the Queen Mary, which is a boat and hotel, apparently, is the name of many things around here. So. And you're closing up tomorrow night, right?
I am.
And it's gonna be a similar vibe. So Gina's basically invented design patterns.
Oh, stop it!
No, of course. But you're, but you have a lot to do and a lot to say about design patterns and design systems.
Yeah, is really a better word, systems. Right?
I know, and I'm forcing her to. I don't mean to talk about something so serious. Keep when you have been awake for as long as you have. So we'll catch you later. But we're just wanted to catch this man on the street moment. Man on the street moment is right. That's kind of our plan for this episode. That was just a little clip of our journey to the CSS Dev Conference. And this episode's going to be a kind of a wrap up of what it feels like to be at a conference like that. I thought that would be kind of a unique thing for the show. But before we kick off, this episode of Shop Talk is brought to you in part by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree's V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. And Environments for Humans, who were who threw CSS DevConf too, right? They also have online conferences. This one coming up is the UX Rebels Summit. Literally, that's the URL too. UX Rebels Summit. It's a one-day virtual conference about leveling up your UX design skill set. Learn what should go into your UX portfolio, learn to help land clients, what tools and gadgets you should use for field research, and much more to help inspire you. Register now at UXRebelsSummit.com. Let's kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. Chris and I are back from the wonderful.
Well, I feel
CSS
like I just got off the plane. I just got in last night from it. So this is another. You know, we've been switching up the format this week a little bit, and not this week, this whole season really, and doing unusually formatted shows. And we thought this would be a really fun day. It was Dave's idea actually. We are both going to be at this conference. It is the CSS Dev Conference. This is the fourth or fifth one, right? I remember the when we went to Hawaii that one year, and all our ads had like us badly playing ukulele in it and stuff.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
That was the first one ever, and then it was in Estes Park, Colorado, at that like crazy shining hotel. And then it was in New Orleans. All these kind of places where like had an element of being haunted to them. And then this one, they really upped the hauntedness because it was on this boat that was like really has been known for being haunted. The Queen Mary in Long Beach, California. And since we're both going to be there, let's slap some microphones on our phones and record it with the kind of loose idea that like, can we do a show that's like, what does it feel like to be at a conference? And then we'll talk about, you know, some of the talks and who we met and what we did and what it was like. For maybe some of you out there who've never been to one or really wanted to come to this one and missed it or just don't know what to expect at a conference, maybe we can re-invoke that feeling a little bit.
I think it's interesting. I'm very curious about the motive. Why do people go to conferences? What makes them propose talks to take on extra work to go to a conference? So It's kind of exciting.
It is. It's in the air lately too. For one thing, there's an awful lot of them. Our industry is pretty well saturated in them. But things like that aren't random. I mean, there's a lot of them because there's a lot of demand for them because people throw them and they tend to work and people, I don't know, they have fun at them. I mean, the market bears them is the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one, the way that CSS DevConf works is pretty interesting in that they pick out a few keynotes, I believe, because I think in the world of conferences, that's smart to do so that you can launch the website and have some faces on it and stuff to sell some tickets. But the rest of the talks, and there's a lot of speakers at this one because it is a multi-track conference, which we'll get to in a little bit. But you submit, and then it's based who gets picked is based on voting, and the voting happens in a blind way. So you look at the title and description of the talks and rate how likely you would be to go and enjoy that talk, and that's what it's kind of based on, which is pretty neat. And it just so happens that the split was pretty near 50-50, right? Maybe like 52% male or something, but as far as the gender split, it was pretty solid, which is cool to know that double, that's what blind voting results in.
Yeah, I found that to be really, really refreshing. I know other conferences have tried blind voting and it just didn't end up well, and that could be for reasons like men propose 6 talks and they hope one gets accepted. I know. I think every male did that at this conference. And women might be more prone to just submitting one and hoping it works out. There's kind of a sort of undercurrents that all affect that. But this conference was really refreshing. I think the first day, and you were probably, we are the same, watched 4 talks on SVG, all by women.
That's right. I mean, that's what I was going to open this to, with the SVG morning kind of thing. But it eluded me till now that they were all women, because it was the opening keynote of the entire conference was Sarah Swaydan, you'll recognize from Shop Talk Show and Oliver. She has been kind of very much leading the charge of talking about SVG in front end development.
You might call her an SV genius. Ah.
Whoa.
Eh.
Good URL. Something. Eh. And there's good stuff in it, and it's funny to listen to Sarah's talk because our brains are very, very similar on this SVG stuff right now. We are talking about the same stuff and writing about the same stuff, and it's great because it validates both of our work, I feel like, and stuff. And she's got a big chapter in the Smashing book on it, and I've been working on writing a lot about SVG and stuff. So it's great, but there's some overlap and some not, and some slightly things that that she's like more into and more knowledgeable about than I am, most of it really probably. But there was one part that, you know, as far as, you know, I'm like, yep, love it, keep talking about this. There's one thing when I think about using SVG, I often break it into, you know, you can use SVG in the image tag. So I feel like a lot of times when there's just some very simple vector image and you're using it like an image in a blog post or in any kind of content, that just use it that way. Like that's like baby steps into SVG.
That's like image source my.svg, right?
Exactly. And that could be a little chart with a proper alt text, or it could be, you know, a little avatar or something. If it's born vector and it's very simple, that's a great way to use it. Similarly, you can use it as a background image in CSS. And I do this more and more, but it's like if you have like a lined background or some kind of like simple geometric design or something, you can use SVG as the background image in CSS as well. Again, baby steps into SVG. And I do that sometimes as well. And then the third one that I normally do is use inline SVG, and that could be an SVG system, or it could be just pasting some of the SVG syntax right into HTML, because you just can do that and that makes sense to do sometimes. And those are the three ways that, you know, day to day in my workflow in life, use SVG 99% of the time. And then Sarah goes up and says, the number one way I use it is through the object tag. That's her absolute favorite and best way to use SVG. And I was like, huh. You know, like we're so, similar in all things. And she really kind of convinced me that it is a pretty interesting way to go. It's kind of just like an iframe in a sense. And in fact, later in a little porch conversation, Estelle Weil came up to me and basically asked me, because I mean, I mostly think of Estelle as like smarter than me in all ways. So when she asked me a question like this, I assume it's kind of leading and that she's going to tell me what the correct answer is. But she's like, what's the difference between an iframe and an object? I'm like, duh, Estelle, lots of stuff. I was like, you can put a
sandbox.
Like, it's kind of weird. I think object is pretty sandbox. I know iframe has some IPAs like push or whatever, the messaging stuff, whatever that is. Push message, I forget what it is. But like that object probably doesn't have. But for the most part, it's a little like sandbox thing that could be SVG or some HTML or whatever. And it has a built-in fallback. Like if this fails, then show the text between the object tags. And anyway, because it has the built-in fallback and because it retains all of the interactivity of SVG, like, you know, hovers and you can run JavaScript in there and you can apply stuff with CSS in there. It's its own little universe of SVG. I can see it really making a lot of sense, you know, for something like I'm embedding a little interactive kind of thing. I'm not sure if it makes sense for like an icon system, but like really kind of anything else SVG land. Imagine like a cool hero graphic that's an SVG or something. Object really is a good way. So that was kind of a big takeaway for me. And Sarah really did a great job of opening up the conference with SVG. And I guess we could keep rolling with this, right? Because it was such an unusual morning at the conference to go to have four SVG talks in a row.
Four. It made you realize how much, I mean, SVG is its own ecosystem, really. I mean, it's its own kind of HTML almost. I'm going to say this and it's going to happen. You could almost do a whole conference on SVG. Oh, no, I just spoke it into existence. But it's...
I think it would be fascinating because it would be filled with like front-end people that are thinking of ways to use SVG in their kind of just regular old front-end life. Like I make websites and I want to use SVG to make it better. But it also, there's subcultures of SVG, like SVG artists and SVG data viz people. And so actually it would be a pretty awesome conference.
No, I mean, SVG is designed, right, to originally be kind of a Flash replacement, like way, 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 way early 2000s back. And so
I would there should be SVG historians at it too, because I know a little bit about the origins of SVG and, you know, Mr. Chris Lilly and all that stuff. But like, what was the real impetus in the early days? Was it a Flash replacement or was it like an archival format or was it like a bandwidth saver? You know, that's the one I mostly think of.
It was a Flash replacement. I know a guy who worked on the spec and whoa. I mean, it's max nerd fest. I mean, just like we're going to create a vector-based rendering language, you know, or whatever. It's cool though, but you could write a whole movie and a whole animated cartoon in SVG if you wanted to. That stuff is kind of possible. But that's
you can, and that was the fourth one was Sarah Drasner who was the winner of CSS DevConf. There's voting on sessions, and they give people vote through a texting mechanism, which is kind of a neat thing. They probably use Twilio and some kind of little nodes. I don't know how they do it. We should look into that because I think it's kind of a fun way to do it. But then, you know, the deal is it's multi-track at CSS DevConf. But because of the voting, the best talks redo their talks at the end of the conference. So just in case you were in the wrong track or whatever, you can get a chance to catch the ones that people regarded as the best of them. And Sarah Drasner, who talked a ton about SVG in animating like complex things. And if you want an example of what that looks like, you could go to csstricks.com. And if you're on a wide enough screen, just because I wanted to make some kind of distinction to not, because the logo is animated. So the dash in CSS Tricks has this tiny little, the dash becomes a toggle. You'll see a little orange dot in there that you can slide back and forth. If you toggle it launches into this like crazy complex SVG animation that Sarah did for me. It uses, you know, GreenSock animation library thing and a bunch of fancy stuff in there. The talk wasn't all about that. It was all about, that was just one of like, you know, 80 examples that Sarah has animated over time. And sometimes they are big, like Dave said, big kind of complicated comic booky interactive, you know, it's not just like SVG is good for charts and icons. It's good for art.
Yeah. Yeah. That was amazing. I mean, I think it was just very clear, like, this is a thing, like, that has, you know, it's a whole half-day conference worth of talking, and it could have gone on. You probably would have got a lot more repetitive, you know, like, here's how paths work, and here's how to animate over and over and over. But, again, I didn't know that stuff. It made me realize I don't know anything about SVG. I'm SVG imposter, master SVG imposter,
I've been hearing a lot about it, and I feel that way. I mean, every one of these talks, I'm like, so right after Sarah Soydans was Brenda Storer, who did a talk on that did cover some of that, like, this is how a path works kind of thing, which is that's pretty interesting territory, right? I learned not so long ago that in the SVG syntax, there are rects, circles, ellipses, polygons, polylines. There's all these basic shapes. The basic shapes are what they call this. I said the word syntastic the other day and somebody corrected me. It's syntactic sugar. Have you ever heard that in dev land? Where it's just like, it's like an API or something that's just simplification of another API essentially, so that the authoring experience is easier. But it could also mean like internal syntactic sugar. So when you use a rect, like deep in the SVG universe, it really just gets at some point converted into a path and then drawn like a path. And then the path is the more like raw syntax, which is like instructions for a pen tool, you can imagine, right? So it's like, you know, pick up pen, move to this point, put pen down, draw straight line to this point, draw curved line to this point kind of thing. And Brenda did covered a little of that, right?
If it's not rude, I would probably give Brenda the neckbeard award for this conference, because you know, there's a little, it's like M050 in all that goobity-gobbledy in the gobbledygook why did I correct that word? All that stuff inside the path, right? And you just you notice there's a repetition, but you have no way to translate it in your brain. You know, my ability to recognize the pattern didn't work, but she explained what it meant, and I knew what it meant. And then after that, I went and I coded text on a path, and I hand wrote a path, but like using this stuff. And that's phenomenal. Come on. Like, I went from being like idiot school to like, I kind of understand this. Oh my gosh. In like one day. So, that is,
I've heard Doug Shepherds can look at the path syntax and visualize what it's drawing without seeing it, like the Matrix.
Wow, I mean, I would kind of, I'm kind of in that boat. Like, I'm starting to see, like, understand
that if you saw enough of it and worked in it all like, day, you could see that.
When you see a Z, that just means that's the end, just like the letter Z. And M means move the cursor to this point, move it. And then you see A, that's arc, you're going to get a nosebleed thinking about that. L, right, or L,
oh, have you seen? I've seen a visualization of how arc drawing is. It's so fascinating. It's like it's way too hard to describe on the radio. But there's kind of like two points, and they're moving at the same time, and then another line that is two points, and they're moving at the same time, and where they intersect is where the arc draws. So if you can imagine all four of those points moving at the same time, which changes the intersection of those two lines, it's like when you see an actual demonstration of it, you're like, oh, I get it. You know, it's actually like, oh, math can do drawing. Anyway, I liked how Brenda did, she did some live decrufting of CSS. Like, here's some crufty SVG output. This stuff gone, this stuff gone, this stuff gone, you know, which is it's stuff you need to know. Like, we're in a weird time with SVG and where all this SVG output is like, a little questionable, needs to be cleaned up, or use a tool. And then it's kind of nice to know what the tool is doing for you. So,
I recently cleaned up an SVG that had some sort of like Illustrator binary thing in it, and it was causing the SVG sprite, which only had like 7 icons or something, to be like 2.9 megs or something. And it was just a little bit of...
Was there like a drop shadow in it or something that output something. Like a data URI? And see, that stuff is... You gotta play with this stuff to know what you're doing, especially when there's software trying to be helpful in it.
And Brenda also managed to mix in ghost facts about the ship into her talk. So that was impressive.
I didn't know this about you, Brenda, but it was not tongue in cheek. It was presented like there are 1500 ghosts on this ship, and that, you know, it was like, as factual as SVG stuff was.
Here is what all these letters in this SVG means. There are 1500 ghosts on this ship. it was one fact in sequential order. I loved it. It was very good.
So Sarah Swaydan opened it up. Brenda Storer after that. Sarah Dresner was the fourth one of it. We talked about all this crazy stuff. And then right before Sarah was Brenna O'Brien, not to be confused with Brenda, who also did a talk about SVG, but scoped it down to SVG type and typography. And she made a CodePen collection of some of her examples that she covered in it. And I thought it was absolutely unbelievably, awesomely well presented talk. Like, I can't say enough good stuff about it. I like it. Like, a long time ago, I did a talk, one of my favorite talks I've ever done. I'd probably could do a lot better job now, but I remember being so proud of myself at the time because my whole talk was about pseudo elements in CSS. It was scoped down so tightly to just that I ended up being like, God, this is so great. When people are done with this talk, they're really going to understand pseudo elements. And I love talks like that. And I feel like that's what Brenna did here by scoping down SVG to just basically the handful of type elements in SVG.
Well, she made it look effortless. Just text path. Here's how you do it. It's easy. And you can start creating all these like kind of super rich typography effects. Like, think of text on an arc, like going around in a circle. Like in CSS, I've done it before. You use lettering JS, explode the thing, and then you just spend a whole afternoon like typing where letters go, and it's a pain in the butt. But like, this is just like effortless.
Well, that's the thing is that, well, then you're like, well, it's real. Those are real letters and spans. Like, that's what's important to know about SVG type is that it's just like H1 or whatever. It's just like a text node is in HTML. It's still text. It's literally still selectable with your mouse, even if you put it on a weird path or in a circle or whatever. It's SEO friendly. Yeah. It's accessible. It's all that stuff. This is real type on the web, but it has better properties in a sense. You have more control over how it looks in some sense. There's some major limitations in which Brenna went all into, like it doesn't wrap and stuff like that. But imagine, and there's some plugins to help with this kind of thing. But remember Dave's FitText.js? I'm sure you remember Dave as the creator of it. But the idea was...
Painfully, I remember.
Well, here's the word that we should have used back then probably that is becoming more in vernacular now is the idea of a text lockup. And I think that's a very common word in magazine layout and graphic design and stuff. But I want a typographic... a chunk of text in which that the like maybe there's different sizes of text, or maybe you position a word relative to another word just so, or maybe like the size, like you make a perfect rectangle of text so there's more letters on line one than there is in line two, so its font size has to be smaller so that they line up both on the left and right edges with the line below it, which has less letters, so the font size can be bigger. You know, I know that's a hard thing on the radio too, but imagine in a magazine and you're flipping through and you see a cool typographic title treatment for an article. That's not that it needs to be just so. You know what I mean? It's not subject to the whim of like, if the font doesn't load, it'll be fine. It won't be fine. It'll be a disaster. You know, it'll look awful. Or like, what if there's a little bit of rendering difference between this browser and the line height is weird or whatever? That would be a problem. Like, a typographic lockup is type that's designed to be just so. So that's one of the things that SVG text can do, because it's, you know, on the web, if you say H1 font size 3rem or whatever, it's 3rem, period. Like if you resize the browser window a little bit, it's still 3rem. There's VH and VW units and stuff that will kind of, you know, as you resize the browser window, we're getting a little closer to maybe doing some typographic lockup-ish stuff. But for the most part, like you can't, text doesn't just fluidly resize like it, but it does in SVG. Like when you set text in SVG, it's part of the coordinate system of the SVG system. So as you resize it, it all kind of maintains it, which is pretty great. And she really kind of drove home that concept and made some of these typographic lockups. And it's, you can use custom fonts in it just like you can in the document. What fonts are available to you use in SVG are just the fonts that are available in that DOM or whatever, just like if you load up a custom font page. And then she's like, okay, well then, because I have more control over, like you can fill text with a gradient in SVG. That's just a feature that you can do. She even had one, you can fill it with an animated GIF. Like it's not like a hack in SVG. You can just straight up do that. And you know, there's ways to kind of do it on the web, but are not, it's not, it's like a hack. It's like an unstandardized thing.
Well, and she made it look so easy. It's like three nodes of SVG give you this like pretty amazing effect. It's really cheap in SVG, but and it's like painful and doesn't work cross browser in HTML and CSS. And so I was convinced, and I was just like, if I unlock this skill set, like there's this has a huge potential for rich layout going forward. You could even,
and the talk itself built upon itself was like, you can do this and then you can combine it with the thing we just learned to do this. And it was all live code, and you know, we'll put links to all this stuff in there, but it's all these examples too were HTML5 slides. You can click through, and then it had live code samples in it. So like, look at this cool example. Now just change some of the attributes yourself and just check it out. I was a big fan of Brenna that day and from now on, because that was amazing.
So SVG morning was, I mean, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's morning could have been different because there was multiple tracks. It's just I chose to go to some.
And I did too. I wanted to highlight some of the other talks. Heather, and I'm going to ruin your last name, I apologize. Miglio Risi talked about accessibility with CSS, and just she's on a crusade to make accessibility just that much easier. Estelle Weil deep dive into animation, and if you haven't seen Estelle talk, she knows how to deep dive.
In fact, you know what? Can you play the clip? Might be a little crackly, but play the clip I have with Estelle.
Okay,
she
go ahead. You want to set it up? Set it up.
No, just play it. It'll be fine.
Okay, here
it's Estelle nerding out.
So Estelle just got finished with her talk about the deep dive into the animation spec and all this quirky stuff, and I'm drilling her about questions at lunch while she's trying to eat her meal, and I'm just not even letting her do that.
It's actually a really good meal.
Oh, good. Well, let's let it get colder while you get this question. So I have, like, I was talking about a fixed header animation where, like, you scroll down X pixels, and then all of a sudden there's a keyframe animation that kicks in that shows a fixed position header at the top. It's like a common design pattern these days. And I was like, I was trying to struggle to find the keyword forwards, because then it will run that animation, it will stay where it is. And Estelle's like, actually the default, it's awkward that the default isn't anything, but the default should probably be both, because...
The default is none. The default should probably be both, because both puts it at the 0% keyframe while the animation delay expires, and leaves it at the 100% keyframe when the animation ends.
Yeah.
So when the animation end event happens, wherever it is, it just stays there.
Right.
So it's not necessarily the 100% keyframe, but it's wherever it ends, it stays there.
Right.
Because you can do a partial animation, and it'll end at 25%.
So then you're like, maybe it should be...
Then I said, what you could actually do is omit the 0% keyframe and the 100% keyframe, or at least the 0% keyframe.
Okay.
Because by default, when you don't declare a from or a 0% keyframe, the animation it'll be as if there was a 0% keyframe written with the default properties that the element
has
before
already.
The animation was added to it.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going from, like, let's say you're transitioning from you want to animate for something to be translated 1,000 pixels.
Right.
And you want to start at 400 pixels, but you don't know where it is originally. If you just put the 10% at 400 and the 100% at 1,000, if it was 200 pixels or 0 pixels of an offset,
it'll just stay where it was.
It'll actually animate through to the 400 over that first 10% or wherever it was. Because you don't always know what the default value is, and you don't want it to jump, because maybe your default, it's supposed to be at the top of the page. So that might not be the solution for you, but it's something to look at.
Yeah, it's clever anyway. It's something that you would know as a spec deep diver.
I think that, yeah, I have kind of a running joke with Estelle at conferences like that, because she does these talks that are, it's just kind of the Estelle style, actually. I mean, she, you know, she's capable of talking about lots of different things, but the common Estelle talk to me is like we're going to literally deep dive into something and like just hit the spec and figure out weird stuff to do with it. And it's a lot of times I'm like this is just good. It's kind of, because I kind of, this is, it's my bread and butter too, thinking about CSS stuff in a comprehensive kind of way. So I'm like, check, knew that. And they're always, it never fails in an Estelle talk that she'll hit on something that's like, boom. Wow, didn't know that. And it happened again. It's like never failed in Estelle talk that I learned one very, very, very interesting nugget from her. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So we're trying to invoke what it's like to be at a conference. There's lots of little side conversations and talks where you learn from, and you know what I mean. We're going to do more of that in a minute, but I should say that this episode is brought to you by the Shop Talk. It's just, we need sponsors to make this thing happen, and thanks so much to Braintree for being one of them. It's a simple, secure, and payments API that you can integrate in minutes. They have language support for you. Like, is your app in Node.js, Java, .NET, Perl, PHP, Ruby, Python? No problem. They have SDKs in all of them ready to go. It can be ridiculously easy. They say there's 10 lines of in-app code to make this thing happen. Elegant code at that, with clear documentation of that, that I can attest to. It is a fine product for accepting lots of different types of payments. You can take PayPal with it. You can take Bitcoin with it. You can Apple Pay and Android Pay and all this stuff, and it all happens through the same API. You know, like if you tried to write your own code and integrate with different services all individually for that, it would be nightmare territory.
Nope.
Especially like your customer writes in and they're like, I signed up with my credit card, but I'd like to switch to PayPal now, and I'd like to change my plan when I do it. That's the kind of thing that's like, oh yeah, you should be able to do that because you're a customer and you want to give us money and you should be able to do whatever you want. But that just turned what I thought was going to be easy into a super nightmare. Or I could use Braintree and have it not be that big of a deal at all. So yeah, it's a pretty dang compelling product if you ask me. The URL to try out Braintree is braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. That's where you want to go. And I believe you get $50,000 in transaction-free payment-free transaction. Not payment-free, but, you know, they...
Fee-free.
Up,
fee-free. Fee-free. Fee-free transactions.
I can't wait. We're literally working right now on CodePen at integrating Braintree in it just because it's a straight-up impressive feature set.
Awesome.
And it's underway.
Back to the conference, there were lots of talks. There was a inline styles versus CSS React talk.
I missed it because we did so much talking on this show about it. I was like, I almost need a break from that conversation. But people said it was extremely well presented and very fair. And even potentially one of the takeaways was that this is really interesting territory and maybe it can kind of influence the future of styling a little bit, however that happens,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I think is nice.
Migrating to Flexbox talk by Charlie Park. I heard good things about it. The web components in the future of modular CSS by Philip Walton. I missed this one. I think I missed it
people
twice.
People are raving about it though. Yes, I know Philip as well, and we got a chance to talk, which was wonderful. But yeah, that was blowing minds there.
Marcelo Summers talked about fighting the zombie pattern apocalypse, and I have an interview here with him. If you don't mind listening, it's really, really interesting territory, especially probably for your organization. If you're Shop Talk Man on the Street, this is Dave Rupert. Who am I talking to today?
Hey, my name is Marcelo Summers.
Marcelo, you gave a talk here at CSS DevConf. Could you tell us what it was about and kind of what you were approaching?
Yeah. So my talk was called Fight the Zombie Pattern Library. Lots of gratuitous pictures of zombies all over the place, but really we were mostly focused on the processes and tools you can use to spin up a pattern library, get it up and running, and keep it living, right? I asked at the beginning of my talk how many people have a pattern library. Most of the room raised their hand. Asked the second question of how many of you actually have it in sync with your app. Almost every single hand went down, right? So we just wanted to talk about ways in which you can keep those alive and keep them going.
What's kind of your, can you give a spoiler? Like, what's your secret to making a pattern library live?
Well, there's no one answer, right? And that's what we tell our clients. But I'd say it's really about getting people talking, right? It's getting your designers and developers collaborating more often, bringing developers into your design process, and then putting in those processes during development, like code reviews, getting people paying attention to CSS, and sharing the code and keeping it in sync between projects, versus, you know, having a manual thing where your pattern library is an artifact of your design process, right? It's extra documentation to maintain. So get away from that and integrate it into your application.
Very cool. And I guess the last question we've been asking people is what makes you come to conferences? What makes you come speak? Why do you spend your time and effort preparing talks to travel around and give them?
Yeah. So my background, I actually went to college and got a degree in finance, right? Complete opposite of what I'm doing today. Hated it, ran away as fast as I could. And so much of my education has come from going to conferences and learning from other people that invested this time. And so I think I feel the desire to now turn around the things that I've learned and come back and contribute to the community and hopefully get people thinking. So we've done that. I do that through talks. I've done that through an open source project that we've launched called Pattern Pack, which is our tool for building pattern libraries. And really just trying to give back to the community that's given so much to me and helped my career develop into something that I love.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you later.
Cool.
Well, that was an excellent interview next to people packing silverware.
Yeah, well, that's what it's like. That's what it's like. Happen. This is real stuff, real world.
Real world. There's silverware in the real world, okay? Not in NPR land. Go ahead, Chris. What are you saying?
Well, just, you know, other highlights of day one was there's a fella I know from CodePen and his work there, Gregor Adams, and I went to his talk on a lot of stuff, including hallucinogens, but it was on fractals, and it was really interesting stuff to see his kind of approach to. He built kind of a tool to live code some of the fractal stuff on stage, and that won a best of award too. That was really cool. There was one little kind of like quickie takeaway from it that I thought was really an interesting exploit. Is remember when WebKit had WebKit? I mean, it still does really. WebKit Box Reflect, and it was like back in the days of Coverflow when it was like you know, you have like a Red Hot Chili Peppers album, and then it's set upon this gradient back background, and where it's set like at an angle, and you can see its reflection below, like it's sitting on a pond or something. You know what I mean?
That was the wet floor. Is that what it was called?
The wet floor. Yeah, I think that was. So they're like, we should have a CSS property that does it, and it's really easy to use. You just set it to have that, and it just kind of automatically does that. But the beauty of it is that it's a thing for cloning. It's a little bit like Moz Element, I guess, right? Or I call it Moz Element, but I think it's kind of like take this element and use it as a background elsewhere or kind of clone it in CSS. It's kind of an interesting idea, but he used it to, so, you know, imagine a fractal is often like, you know, make a div and then set another div next to it that's 50% of the size, and another one that's 50% of its size, and another one that's 50% of its size. That's just the world's simplest fractal. I'm sure they get much more complicated than that. But do that, but then do it like a tree too. So there's eight arms of this tree that all have these diminishing chunks sticking off of it or whatever. You can render that a lot simpler using Box Reflect, because it not only halves the amount of stuff that you have to do, because, you know, a lot of times a fractal is, you know, render it something over here and then an exact opposite pattern of it over here. But in order to do that, it's not just the how much rendering it is, but there's a lot of like nesting and stuff that has to happen to make that other side. So it's less rendering, but it's also less DOM code too. And what he's fighting against is like intense DOM. He's pushing the browsers to the level where they very often crash.
Yeah.
But this helps that.
I saw some examples, just pictures tweeted out, and it's kind of insane what he was able to achieve with just, CSS and some DOM nodes.
Stacy talked about code reviews and stuff. That was pretty darn cool. She had some funny quotes in it. We'll put some choice tweets up in the show. The style guide stuff we just talked about lent itself well to Gina, was the final keynote, and who also talked about design patterns and stuff, and who brings the noise because she's behind Salesforce's Lightning design pattern, which is just kind of super well done and fascinating stuff.
I watched the container-based RWD element queries by Philip Zastrow from Sparkbox. Really cool. It's kind of available today. There are polyfills that do it. There's not a CSS solution, but if you really, really need it, there are like six libraries or so that kind of deal with element queries or container queries. So that's something.
You know what I think about this stuff? I think if they existed, we would, that 95% of the queries that we write would be them.
I think so.
I think when you write a media query, you have a specific element in mind as you're doing it. And if it was available already that we could use that, we would. I feel like most media queries would be element queries. I think it's that big of a deal, and it's kind of a bummer that we don't have them, but whatever.
And then I also watched Micah Godbolt's deep dive on visual regression testing, using Phantom CSS or WebDriver CSS or was the other one? Wraith, to kind of like spit out, visual diffs. And what was cool is he's, you can do it on the page level, but one text change will ruin your page. So he recommends doing it on the kind of component level in your style guide.
I missed this. That's nice. Do it on the style guide. Clever.
On the style guide, and then you have like dummy data on the style guide, right?
Because the false positives thing is a big problem with these. And this would reduce the false positives.
Yeah, in theory, like your visual regression testing sits in your continuous integration path. So you push code to Jenkins, and Jenkins then does the test.
Yeah, use CodeShip or whatever.
Yeah, CodeShip or Travis CI or whatever. And you don't want to false block a shipment, right? A deploy. So that's why you kind of set up a controlled test page that you're trying to kind of test visual regressions against. And it was very, very clever. I sort of wondered like, oh, this like has to take 30 minutes or something. But no, it takes like 30 seconds or less, to kind of run 10, 15 tests. And that's pretty amazing. I think you can very quickly learn, did you mess it up? So I think that's,
and this is day one of this thing, which is pretty amazing. We it's the end of the day and your mind is full of stuff and everybody's really excited. It's like the perfect timing is after day one is like when everybody's like at their best. I feel like conferences like this. So we ended up sneaking away with a pretty big group, and we went out to dinner and we kind of walked around. I think it's usually a good opportunity to kind of leave the venue for a minute and see where you're at.
Your sea legs.
So we went out to dinner, which was really nice, and had we sat with a big group, but me and Dave sat with Mina and asked her a bunch of questions about what it's like, working for Hillary essentially, which is pretty fascinating.
I have an interview.
Stuff.
Do we want to play this? I'm here with Mina Markham, guest of the Shop Talk Show. She's been on before. Mina, tell us, you're at Hillary now. You're working with Hillary.
I am. I'm working at Hillary for America as one of their front-end engineers.
Okay, so Mina, big topic. We've just gone through a whole day of conference, a whole day of like seven something talks. We'll talk best talk of the day. Go.
I would say Genus. I'm really into building like design system and pattern libraries, and like hearing how she did it at Salesforce is like really inspiring me to kind of go back and put some of those ideas to play in the one that I'm building now.
So you're kind of building one. What struck me from that talk was just how just almost fulfilling to like you can make one decision and change kind of a company of sorts. What was your key takeaway?
I really like the idea. I think when they built something called, I believe it's called Theo, where she has like this configuration file where they like spits out all of the different like formats needs to be in, like these swatches, and like it spits out JSON and it spits out SAS and like all these other different things. Like it kind of ensures there's one single source of truth that you can like then permeate across all the different platforms it needs to go across. Like that sounds so cool.
That's great. I totally agree. And I hopefully that talk will get online and people can see it. But I really don't know. So, but thanks for sharing. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's my favorite question. What talk won the day? So,
Yeah. It's hard to pick, but it's fun to just pick one so we can talk about something kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So we went to dinner and then we came back and they threw a yacht rock party, which was so ridiculously crazy. They had this balloon octopus that was just ridiculously awesome, and the band was incredible. IBM sponsored the thing. There was wine flying. Anyway, that was fun, and everybody's so excited after that that it's like it's midnight. Let's get an Uber downtown. So we ended up at this crazy bar, the Blind Donkey downtown and in Long Beach, and that was probably a questionable decision. But you know, Dave's teaching us Japanese songs, and there people are quoting Labyrinth on the TV, and it was crazy. And then it kind of rolls into day two, which we'll do in just a second. But I should say, you know, CSS DevConf, they're not sponsoring this show, but they are in a sense, because their sponsorship is not what made us do this show, but it's done by Christopher and Ari, who are Environments for Humans, and they run these online conferences as well. So they do a couple of the in-person ones. CSS DevConf's the big one, but they do kind of more of the virtual live ones where you attend from your browser, which are wonderful as well. And one they have coming up, and this is November 17th. Is the day, so pull the trigger soon, peeps. It's coming on Halloween here. November 17th, UX Rebels Summit. That's the URL that you want to go to there. It's a one-dayer this time, and it's all about UX, which is a massive topic, but they pick talks across the spectrum really well. Designing for happiness, tools and gadgets for research, designing your UX portfolio, which is huge. What happens? What if your title is UX? What if that's what you do? That's your thing. That's your bag. What does your portfolio look like? I don't even know. Should probably go to this talk to find out. Designing your design team. Oh, I wish I was at that one. Anyway, the UX Rebels Summit. It's a one-day thing, and go register now. That one looks like it's going to be amazing. 100% satisfaction guaranteed.
There we go. I would. You should.
Plus,
go.
It's $99. So that's a pretty good reason to go, because it's some of the best stuff. And it's so inexpensive. Not only is the ticket inexpensive because it's less expensive to produce, you know, it's less expensive because you don't have to get on a plane and do all this stuff that you have to do.
Best online conferences in the biz. Boom. Hands down.
Oh, right. So day two, there was less talks. There was some talks, but there was only two different slots, because there was those two slots, and then it went into the all speaker panel, which is always kind of fun. And there's always some wonderful nuggets of wisdom in there. I even remember Brenna had a wonderful one in the all. First of all, Dave was a little heavy on the rap horn.
I maybe had somebody a asked. Rap air horn. I had to bring out the priceless sound effects. But yes,
somebody asked about, you know, that, like, how do you get a job? What do you work on next? You know, the kind of classic shop talk show question, just build websites kind of thing. But she had this point that, like, if you feel like, you know, and there was some gender stuff that ended up getting talked about too, there's 10 bullet points on a job posting, a woman might, you know, just data suggests that, look, be like, I only know 6 of those 10 things, I better not apply. Whereas a man might go, 6 out of 10, here we go, I'm in. And she had this point that's like, you really pretty much everybody in the room at the moment, it qualifies for a lot more than they think they do because they're problem solvers. These are, you know, the people that come to these conferences and listen to podcasts and are into their work are like kind of by nature and attracted to this industry and do a good job in this industry because of their ability to kind of solve problems. Just because you don't know some dumb bullet point on a list, it doesn't mean that you're not capable of it. And really your tendency towards being a problem solver is so like overrides any dumb bullet point any day. I loved that.
Mm.
But there's, you know, there's insight at those things, and those are pretty unique to big conferences, and get just yet another reason to go because you get to see the.
I mean, imagine
see everybody like, talking at once,
like soft pulling 30 people, you know, on one thing you're like stuck on or can't get over or stuck thinking about. It's kind of a cool opportunity to just kind of to just be like, here, 30 people. Come up with an answer.
Yeah, and they usually go pretty good because Christopher runs it pretty good and he makes sure that the questions aren't like, what do you think the future of web design is like? You know, or something, you know, because right. There's like no answer to that. Or there are things you can talk about, but it's so broad that it's like kind of boring.
It doesn't, yeah, it's sort of hypothetical, not a practical.
So, and then there was the best of sessions, and then my little contribution to this was that we ran a show and tell session, or I ran a show and tell session there, mm-hmm. which I was trying to get people to come and do. It's kind of the format for the CodePen meetups we run usually too, where like anybody can come up and do stuff, and it just was unbelievable, and I couldn't have possibly had a better time doing it, and I hope I get to do show and tells for the rest of my life, because God, do I love them. Because you get so much crazy stuff, you never know what you're going to get, and everything was like, wow. It was so good. I learned about Grommet.io there, which we don't have time to get all into, but it's kind of like I don't even want to get into it. It's like Bootstrap-esque, but for enterprise, but in a good way and accessibility focused, and it's kind of amazing. These two fellas got up and did this like Elvis and Costello kind of back and forth, kind of like I'm gonna win styling of this div over you thing, which is like a lesson in accessibility. It was insane. It went like 30 rounds. It was so great. I think this woman,
like, so like almost like layer tennis, but pen
it
tennis.
Was, but it was like to learn
tennis. oh stop.
Dave, beep that in post. Yeah,
unsubscribe.
I think there a woman named Deb, but I can't remember. I'm so sorry, but she came up and demoed Affinity Designer, which I didn't even know about, but it's like its vector editing capabilities are kind of unbelievable. People talked about CSS classes, which is not a class name, but like a thing that kind of launched in Berlin to teach people CSS that is kind of has open course material and stuff. It was just the tip of the iceberg. There's probably 20 people came up and showed super interesting stuff about CSS and SVG and data visualization and all this stuff, and please invite me to your conferences to do show and tell because I'm good at it. I get good stuff out of people, I'm telling you. Anyway, cool. After that, we got to listen to Dave close this thing up. And Dave, so a lot of times, I mean, you're a tech, we're all tech people. Most of the times you're invited to speak at conferences to talk tech, and you probably could have here, but chose, and this is not for the first time, to not really talk about code itself, right?
Right. I'm kind of done kind of non-ish code talks, but usually my talks are just very, you know, kind of about an aspect of code, and then I'll like do a live demo, but I did none of that this time. This was more like a collection of my thoughts from, I don't know, like when you like you turn off the computer, kind of what do you think about all night, you know, or about the web and stuff like that. Maybe you have a really healthy lifestyle and you don't think anything, and I love that about you. But I tend to just be like, I'll listen to a podcast and I'll just be like, oh, how does that apply to the web? And so this was kind of the collection of that, like, I don't know, the last 6 months-ish or so of thinking. So, and yeah, the title of my talk was The Art of Being Wrong. How's that?
It was
for a
pretty,
talk?
It was, It was pretty darn good. There was lots of just Dave calling out garbage and stuff that the world needed to hear, and it was very well received in that way. So
it's sort of built on that This Idea Must Die episode we listened to. We did a few episodes back, but we live in such a right and wrong way to do web design and there's all this stuff we have to do. And you just kind of want to build a website. Right. And so it's kind of like, how do we deconstruct kind of bad ideas and how do we like have good ideas? And the spoiler there is blogging. So make blogs and just post your ideas and your thoughts. Like if you do that, we can have better discussions other than like, you have to do this because this is bad or something. So I don't know if you've seen
it. It was a wonderful way to close it. And so it really tied up the conference in a great way. And God, we barely covered what's going on here. Natalia was there sketchnoting the whole thing. There was a Dribbble meetup at the way end, which was wonderful. And Natalia hosted the drink and draw there, which there's always been somebody involved with illustration in some way that runs those. It's been done in the past, and it's been really, really fun. God, Rachel Neighbors did it one year. It was great. Anyway, that was the you participated in that, didn't you?
I did.
Drink and draw.
Yeah, it was fun. I was team captain of the team. We are called Float Right, I think. Yeah, we are Float Light.
Nice.
There was Left Shark and Float Right, and it was good. it was fun. Time. So we of course, you know, there was like challenges like pick somebody from the audience and tell them how to write a CSS in the worst way possible. So you're kind of like the worst employees at a startup ever, sort of like just telling people like, just you gotta be really specific about this code. So keep adding TRs to it. So it was good. It was really good time. And so,
Natalia's of Kitty Toggles fame too, which there's a CSS Tricks post on, but it was like the, you know, when you have a stylized checkbox essentially that's on or off, or in a Toggles case, left or right, which, you know, you've seen like stylized on like iOS, you know, they're mm-hmm. little fancy toggles and you click it and it animates to green or whatever. Natalia designed some that go back and forth from sad kitty to happy kitty. And I thought it was the greatest thing I've ever seen, and did a post on that. It's actually kind of, there's some like interesting, clever stuff. Look at all these people in the same place. There was, you know, Louis Lazarus was there talking about crazy Dom stuff, which was, I thought was interesting because it was like a great, like kind of recycling of the material and stuff that he thinks about and writes about all the time. So it's like, that's a good opportunity for a talk too. Like talk about what you already talk about, you know, that's kind of on your mind right now. Kevin Lamping there talking about open source stuff that was great. I remember I was at that talk and I was sitting next to Philip Walton and I was showing him some internal analytics stuff we're doing, and he's a developer evangelist on the Google Analytics team, so he's telling me stuff that we could be doing there. And it was just like, that's what it's like to be at these conferences. There's just ideas flowing around, you know, your brain is just full of stuff and then it explodes, and then you go out you go out to party afterwards. In fact, I didn't play the one, but on the you know, when we were at the Blind Donkey, Dave was singing us a little song here. I think we have a rendition of it that we
have the song
here.
Okay, all right. Let's see how this goes.
I think there's a copy of it in there.
All right, here we go.
A little loud in the bar, to be fair.
Right. You taught us a song at dinner. Maybe we could do it together.
All right.
Yeah, we could do
ready?
It. Yeah, it's Ikizaki.
Okay. Here's a song we learned at dinner.
Yeah.
Shoubai hanjo, boku ne hanjo, minasama omami de kake moche, dosari!
Yeah, at the last moment there, maybe we'll get Dave to explain it to us slightly more sober at another time. But it's like tossing your beans because you had a bountiful harvest and you have bountiful money, but like beans is like metaphor of a harvest, and you're tossing your
Ming Mong. It's a song about being rich. Because you're about
to
like,
you don't have to
harvest.
Be rich to sing it. You just have to be like, you want to sing about being rich, like, right now.
Right. You know, it's celebrating what you got right now.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounded like fun. I wish I could remember it.
And then right after that, so that's, you know, even I can tell your voice is a little sore even right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You should hear mine, though, the morning after.
Was it? I have the morning after here.
Is the morning of day 2 of CSS DevConf. voice is a little raspy. We went out a little late last night. It was a beautiful conference, and then we gathered up some friends and went out for dinner at a nice little place called The Reef, and then came back and we had a yacht rock party, which was an excellent idea for a conference. There was dancing, there was a giant octopus made of balloons, Dave was yelling the word boat a bunch,
boat.
Lots of dancing, it was really fun, and then it kind of ended as things do, and we're like, let's go out, and we ended up going to taking an Uber over to the Blind Donkey, and that was fun. It was a fun little kind of basement bar. They were playing the Labyrinth on TV. Anyway, we were just out a little late. But never fear, I'm up in time for the rest of day 2.
Well, that just hopefully this gives you kind of a feel for... obviously, we don't want to highlight the debauchery too much, but it was fun.
No, but it happens. I mean, we tried to get into the engine room, and we dang near did it, and then the guard kicked us out.
We got busted sneaking into the engine room after hours. So much fun, though. What a good time on a really awesome boat. So I think I would do again, A++.
That's the lesson here. Is we invite Chris and Dave to your conference. We'll have fun.
If you want to up the trouble, just bring in the Shop Doc Show. Well, Chris, should we wrap this up? I know we probably missed a little bit of work.
Sure,
gotta get back to work here. So.
And there's plenty of stuff coming up. We got a rapid fire coming up. We have a panel discussion coming up. You know, we have a next season work I'm planning. So lots more Shop Talk to go, both new and classic.
And I have a tiny baby now, and so that's very fun. And I'm not sleeping, so expect more from this season. of the Shop Doc Show. We really appreciate you. Please be sure to vote this up in your podcatcher of choice. 5 stars. It's just that easy. Oh, and I need to check and make sure if anyone used the word tractor beam. I think somebody did one time. And I'll go check those. And thanks, everyone, for if you hate your job, go get a new job over at shoptalkshow.com/jobs. Follow us on Twitter at shoptalkshow. And of course, you know, thanks again to Christopher and Ari for putting on such a great conference, and thanks to all the speakers and everyone for chipping in. We really appreciate it. And Chris, you got anything else for us?
Shoptalkshow.com.
Show by Hanjo, Bokane Hanjo, Mina Sama, Omane de Kakemoche, Dosari.